Event of the Season by Perry Pontiac. With Geraldine McEwan as Lady Wulfruna Pendley, Richard Caine as Bransbury, Maureen Lipman as Miss Blaines, and George Baker as Dr. Gastrell.
Lady Wulfruna Pendley's residence, a butler speaking. Oh, good afternoon, General Sir Filton Sheckles. You have bad news for her ladyship. I'm afraid that Lady Wulfruna never accepts bad news during tea. Might I take a message? Certainly. Oh, there seems to be no paper. I'll write it on my shirt cuff, if I may, sir. Yes. Yes. Yes, thank you, General. Shall I read it back, sir? Of course. A new world war of tremendous proportions and promising enormous casualties could well destroy civilization rather soon. Indeed, catastrophe would appear to be almost certain in approximately a year to 18 months. This information is, of course, top secret, and I tell you as a close friend and trust implicitly in your silence. I look forward to seeing you at your gala garden party on the 31st of next month. Is that right, General? Yes, I'll give her the message immediately after tea, sir. I'm sure she'll be grateful. Thank you so much, sir. Goodbye, sir. The destruction of civilization almost certain in a year or so. This will be the end of an era for me. The end also of all one's little pleasures and joys and delights. And so abruptly. Indeed, before one's ever had them. Oh, should I take my chance, I wonder? Now and at long last, before it is too late.
Oh.
But I soliloquize too loudly and awaken her ladyship.
Oh. What time is it, Bransbury?
Just after four, madam.
In the morning or afternoon?
Afternoon, madam.
Ah. Is it raining?
No, my lady.
A drowsy mist, there is, choking the sun's slant rays with fleecy bars, very much like Tuesday.
Isn't this Tuesday?
No, madam. It was, of course, until very recently indeed, but it is now Wednesday, the 16th of July.
Are there any meringue shells in the tin?
Yes, madam.
Is there more tea in the pot?
I think so, madam. Yes, my lady.
Bransbury. Where is that reporter woman who is writing the magazine article on my upcoming garden party, the event of the season?
Miss Blaines is currently moseying around the grounds, madam, looking for items of interest.
I see. Oh. And when is Dr. Gastrell coming to examine the upstairs maid?
The doctor is doing so now, my lady. He should be here shortly to offer you his customary attentions.
May I ask you a question, Bransbury?
Certainly, madam. I should be honored.
Bransbury... Come and sit down here, far from me on the sofa.
Aye, madam.
Yes, I wish to indulge in some affable badinage with you. I feel it one's responsibility to try to understand one's workforce. Have a cup of tea yourself.
Thank you, madam. I shall. One lump or two?
One, I think. And a little milk.
Thank you.
Bransbury. You have been with me for a number of years, and yet we have never communicated beyond the boundaries of command and obedience, and quite properly so, but it would do no harm to relax for a moment, especially as I am curious about a point or two to begin with. Where exactly are you from, Bransbury?
Where am I from, madam?
Yes. What country, for example?
From England, madam, like yourself.
Ah, that of course explains your fluency with the language. You do very well.
Thank you, madam.
And now, another question. I hope I'm not being too personal.
Not in the least, madam.
Tell me, Bransbury, what is it like being inferior? I mean, do you ever become envious, for example, of those so far above you? Have you any hopes and dreams beyond your station? That sort of thing?
Well, as to my status, madam, I am, if I may say so, fiercely proud of my inferiority. My people have a rich tradition of drudgery and humiliation, and I am very conscious of this heritage at all times. As to envy, I should think not so. I have one of the finest butler suits in the district and an excellent set of cleaning utensils. And as to my hopes and dreams, it is difficult to say.
and difficult to listen to, I'm sure. Perhaps it is best that you people have your own little secrets.
Yes.
You may finish your tea and return to your duties.
I do indeed have my secrets, madam. In fact, if you will permit me, I should like to speak to you for a moment on a highly personal and sensitive subject. It is very important to me.
I don't know, Bransbury. Will it be deeply moving, do you think?
I hope so, madam.
In that case, I think not. I am about to eat a meringue shell. A difficult feat at the best of times, but virtually impossible, I should think, while sobbing with uncontrollable emotion.
Of course, but please, my lady, I shall be as brief as possible, I promise you. I've been working on this little speech for over 16 years. In fact, ever since I joined your household. I think I have it all by heart now, so it shouldn't take long.
Indeed. I trust you've not been composing it during your working hours.
No, only in idle moments, madam, plucked from my free time. While in bed, for example. Indeed, while dreaming.
Mm. Very well, Brandy.
Thank you, madam. I shall fall to one knee, if I may. My dear madam, from the moment I entered your service, my feelings for you have deeply affected me. I am, as you may have noticed, quite regularly weak with yearning and faint with fond desire. My head pounds, my heart blazes.
Indeed. Perhaps the doctor had better have a peep at you when he arrives. You see, Bransbury, there is a solution to everything.
The ache in my head cannot be cured, madam. No, not by all the aspirin of the Indies. The inferno in my heart cannot be quenched. My dearest madam, you are for me... what? An angel without mercy, an elemental spirit like the sun, warming others with your gaze, but to me, in sad eclipse.
Me? Bransbury?
Oh, yes. Oh, to yourself, perhaps, you appear only a woman with a woman's weaknesses and flaws, her defects and vices and faults, her sins and shows and shams. But in my eyes, your frailties only make you the more delicate. Your strengths, the power to please and to enjoy, to command and to obey, make you incomparably desirable both as employer and amorous partner. In conclusion, madam, I invite you most heartily to accept me as your current paramour and to prepare yourself for a series of unusual and, well, I think I can assure you, memorable experiences. Well, madam?
No, I don't think so. It would only complicate things.
On the contrary, my lady, it would simplify things wonderfully. You, the love slave, I, the master. With all respect, I really can't see your objections on that point. Have you another reason, madam? Is it because you are a high-born, beautiful widow of great wealth and prominence, with a vast estate and friends of power and suitors of distinction, and I am merely your ill-paid, ill-favored butler, a base hireling and as common to you as the Persian carpet beneath your feet? That is it, isn't it?
Ransby, the whole idea is completely out of the question. Now, would you like some more tea and a slice of Madeira cake?
But why is it out of the question, if I may ask? Don't you love me?
Why, no. Bransbury?
Oh, I thought you might not.
I do pity you on occasion, I admit.
Well, might not that over the years grow into love? Might it not in time sprout wings and roost among the angels?
No, I think not, Bransbury. Now, are you quite certain about that Madeira cake?
I don't understand. Over the years, I've distinctly noted flirtatious hints from you. Once in 66 and again in the spring of 74... Madam, is there someone else?
My dear Bransbury, there is anyone else. I don't pretend to be a very discriminating person, but I've always found you, if I may be frank...
Oh, please, madam.
Well, then, frankly, Bransbury, I have always found you quite... odious. Yes. Yes, that is the word. Now, I don't want to discourage you from vain hopes. No doubt somewhere there is someone who would find you tremendously attractive. A nice blind parlour maid, for example, or an elderly crone, bedridden and senile and eager for company. She would find you quite delightful, I have no doubt. I shall ask the doctor when he comes in, if he knows of anyone appropriately handicapped. But don't be so cast down. I promise you, Bransbury, someday we shall laugh about all this. In fact, I think I can feel the giggles coming on even now.
Can you? Miss Blaine, madam.
Ah, good afternoon, Lady Wulfruna.
I am Miss Blaines. I'm writing that article about you for my magazine, Stately Homes and Hostesses. Good afternoon. You've been trampling in the garden, I imagine. Did you also visit the lake and the orangery and the great pagoda? Oh, yes, yes, I've been on the loose for hours. Thank you. I even wandered down to that little area of shabby dwellings on the far edges of the grounds. Rather surprising, I thought. Ah, you mean Squalor Town. It's a little tourist attraction of mine. It helps to defray the considerable expenses of the estate. I am rather proud of it, really. It's a perfect replica of an old-fashioned slum community of 100 or 200 years ago. Very quaint, indeed. And are there people there, besides tourists, I mean? Oh, yes. It is populated with genuine slum dwellers, tenants of mine, in fact, who live there gratis, on condition that they maintain the appropriate standard of living. How unusual. Yes, a unique attraction in our part of Gloucestershire, I think. Ideal for a family outing. They are happy enough, I suppose. Who? The people? I really don't know. Who can say? Perhaps they're not. But just because they don't enjoy being poor, there's no reason other people shouldn't. An ill wind, my dear Miss Blaines? Ah, yes. But to my garden party. It will center around the Lady Wulfuna Rose Garden and the long ride beyond, over towards the Great Fountain. I see it as the culmination of my career as a woman of charity. It should establish me... You may take this down, if you wish, dear.
Oh, certainly.
It should establish me, if I may say so, in the front rank of the selfless, and as a society hostess at the very peak of her powers. It will be a great moment in my life and in the lives of those pathetic creatures around the world whose interests I have tried to represent, whether they be stricken with some exotic deformity or merely expiring in some inhospitable sewer, victims of war and natural disaster.
War? I beg your pardon, your ladyship. I neglected to read you my cuff. There's a telephone message on it of some importance, I believe. It arrived during tea.
I am busy now impressing Miss Blaines. I shall read your cuff later, Bransbury. Remove it from your sleeve and put it inside my magazine.
Of course, my lady.
Lady Wulfuna, I'm overwhelmed as usual.
Good afternoon, Dr. Gastrell. This is
Miss Blaines. You... Ah, Dr. Gastrell.
Yes.
Dr. Gastrell is a local physician. We have him do the servants.
Ah, yes.
How do you do?
Miss Blaines is a journalist. She is writing an article on me and on the gala garden party I'm giving next month for one of my many charitable causes.
Yeah, I see. You have a difficult task, Miss Blaines, portraying an angel, something that the scriptures themselves barely bring off.
Don't discourage her, Dr. Gastrell. She owes it to her readership to tell them everything. Besides, you are not here to discuss my perfections. You have come merely to examine the upstairs maid. A touch of heart trouble, I believe.
True, Lady Wulfuna. But may not a doctor sometimes examine his own heart?
In private, of course. Shall we go, Miss Blaines? I wish to show you more of the grounds. Bransbury, offer the doctor something. He may wish to linger here until my return.
Certainly, madam.
The charming woman. You are a lucky menial, Bransbury.
Oh, thank you, sir. May I offer you something to drink, Dr. Gastrell?
No, I'd much rather have something to eat, thank you. Turtle flambé, I think, with an encircling corsage of blossoming lotus, truffles stuffed with mandarin and molly, great sashes of smoked salmon, necklaces of caviar. For entree, venison singed with flame and healed with honeysuckle. And for afters, a simple piece of cheddar. A few cream crackers, whatever you have.
But nothing to drink.
That I want to share 53, slightly chilled, I suggest, and with the cheese haute brion of your choice. Here, I took the liberty of writing it all out before.
Oh, thank you, sir, most considerate. I'll pass your order on to the cook.
Good.
It may take a while to prepare your meal, Doctor. Cook will have to slip down to the shops for the cheddar and cream crackers. Look, won't you have some of this caviar, for starters?
Oh, excellent. Oh, Bransbury, this being an eminent doctor, it's not easy curing, healing, saving, working miracles, if you wish. Sometimes I don't think the society sufficiently reveres one.
I know, sir. Pardon me, Doctor, but may I ask you a question?
Of course.
Thank you. It is concerned with poor Parthenope, the upstairs maid. You've just seen her, I believe. You must tell me how she is, Doctor.
How she is? The upstairs maid?
Yes. You can be frank with me, sir.
Oh, very well. But this must be kept in complete confidence. She is not to know I told you.
I understand, Doctor.
Well, first of all, let me assure you that her indiscretions with me have been relatively infrequent. Few, but yes, that's my motto.
Her indiscretion?
Yes, we have had such moments of passion. Bransby's memory can scarcely credit or words chronicle of the body itself believe. Yes, she has been a most fascinating patient.
Pardon me, Doctor, I don't think you understood my question. I was inquiring into the young lady's health.
Health? Oh, I see. Well, she's in superb condition. Thigh of ivory, a bosom of exemplary firmness, and such powers of endurance. Agile as a ferret, spry as a fawn, light leaping in a forest dell. No need to worry about her, I assure you.
And her heart trouble?
Only a ruse to draw us together, my dear fellow.
I see, sir.
I should hardly have come if she had been seriously ill or anything like that. Oh, no, 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 no. Call me finicky if you like, but such things do upset me. I'm in the business of health, after all. I find all this sickliness that's about rather off-putting, if I may say so.
Well, you should take up some sort of relaxing recreation, Doctor. I myself spend my afternoons off playing bowls with a fine group of chaps down at the sports center in town. We go at it most vigorously. Nothing sedate about me there, I assure you.
Well, I have my own means of relaxation, Bransby. You see, at certain times I become a very different person.
You do, sir?
Yes. When the mood is on me, Bransby, I change dramatically from a man of sober good sense and high moral character and distinguished reputation to a rake hell, a bounder even. Indeed, if I may be frank, a cad.
Surely not, Dr. Gastro.
Yes, yes. Drinking and whoring, swearing and carousing, gambling, gallivanting, blustering and blaspheming, night after night, year after year.
It doesn't sound easy.
Perhaps not. But then nothing worthwhile ever is. You're too respectable, Bransby. A little dissipation would do you no end of good. Late nights, rich food, poor sleep, nothing like it.
Dr. Gastro.
Miss Blaine?
Won't you have some caviar, madam?
Oh, just one, please. Delicious. Lady Wulfruna and I have had a most thorough exploration of the grounds. Most fascinating. Her ladyship is now in the long gallery, adding to her guest list for the party. Oh, she would like you to fetch her the Who's Who, Bransbury, if it isn't too much trouble.
Of course, madam. Excuse me, please.
I know of you, Dr. Gastro. Your fame as a physician is considerable. Indeed, a few years back, I used to hear your little commercial jingle on the local wireless station all the time. You know the one. Vaccination, amputation, remember this rhyme. Ring Dr. Gastrell every time. Cancerous growth or festering sore. Merivale 5594. Most persuasive, I always thought.
Thank you.
I suppose I am completely unknown to you. As is my magazine, I fancy. An anonymous figure from a mysterious world. Such are the extremes of fame. Still, strange the two of us meeting like this. Two people without any connection or common interest or conversation. Thrown together randomly by fate. Mind you, it would be stranger still if we didn't meet, the two of us being in this room at the same time. Life is always so full of surprises, is it not? And even when it isn't, well, that's a surprise too. Well, as you're reading your newspaper, I think I'll have a little look in my magazine. Oh, pardon me, Doctor, is this your cuff? Dr. Gastrell? Oh, sorry, I remember now, it's the butler's. There's an inscription. A telephone message, so it seems. A new war in a year to 18 months. Perhaps the end of civilization. Time is surprisingly short. Oh, Miss Blaines, Miss Blaines. You have made yourself unknown throughout the world. Even to this man.
And yet of him I know enough, and also of her ladyship. I know such things that, written up by me and published in a leading magazine, would foul their reputations evermore, web them with scandal inextricably, and bring me fame at last. Lit by that glow, I should ascend and star-like touch the heavens, admired and blessed as they would be despised. Revenge and reputation satisfied, for I know more of them than I shall say, even to myself in this quite public way. The end of civilization. Oh, this is an opportunity I can scarcely overlook. So farewell, my meekness. Hello, my brazen effrontery. Dr. Gastrell, I must make a little confession to you. I not only know you, I know something about you. Something quite disgraceful, I'm afraid.
About me? How could you possibly know about me?
Do you remember an operation you performed several years ago? It was a simple enough affair, but with certain unlooked-for complications.
I have performed only one operation in the past 10 years, Miss Blaine's, a routine appendectomy. It was on a young man, as I recall. A likable chap. A bouncer, I think he was, in public houses.
A success, was it, Doctor?
No, rather unpleasant memory, I fear. You see, Miss Blaine's, I never enjoyed the operating table. Some doctors love it. I never could. To feel the blade in your hands, the fine spray of blood in your face, somehow I could never get the taste for it.
And in this case?
In this particular case, because of the quite unacceptable concentration of gore and guts in the man, horrid gobbets of things dangling about everywhere, you've no idea. I'm afraid I was obliged to operate with my eyes shut. Unfortunately, this proved an unsuccessful technique, so I eventually relinquished the operation to another doctor who did quite well, so I heard.
Very well, yes. But it was necessary for him to distinctly alter the operation and the patient. The result, Doctor, was a complete change of the person's sex. You see, I am the patient, Harold Glaines.
You?
Yes, Dr. Gastrell. Of course, a great deal more was necessary in the days that followed. Injections, reductions, additions, imaginative corsetry, that sort of thing. It seemed to take forever, but it is now quite complete.
Ah, excellent work! Excellent work! First-class job, I must say. I'm very happy for you, Harold.
No, Haroldine, actually. Unfortunately, Doctor, at the time, I was rather less than happy with the result. As was my fiancée, a woman of very precise preferences. Shortly afterwards, she completely disappeared from my life. I never saw her again. Some say she became a bareback rider with a gypsy circus currently on tour in Tunisia. Others say she now runs an alpaca ranch in the rich lowlands of the central Andes. And yet others that she is a tobacconist in Wolverhampton. Oh, Wanda. My Wanda.
Tragic story, of course. But surely you have formed other romantic attachments since then to members of your old gender, I dare say. An attractive woman like you, there is someone special, I'm sure.
Yes, perhaps. And yet, Dr. Gastrell, I shall be frank. I have never entirely forgotten the episode, nor forgiven its incompetent perpetrator.
Incompetent? Adam, remember I am a physician.
For the moment, yes. But I plan to publish a full report of this operation to the world. I shall not use my name, of course. One must protect one's sources. But I shall use yours, Doctor, ho, 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 most frequently, and with great pleasure.
But no, don't you see that this is a terrible plan? It would quite destroy my reputation. No, Miss Blaines. It's quite out of the question.
Not at all, Doctor. It would make a first-class story. Excellent work, as you might say.
Oh, please, Miss Blaines. Haroldine, you must reconsider. Surely there is no need to recount this unfortunate incident.
I do not think, Dr. Gastrell, that you appreciate how distressing it is for a person like me to have become a woman so relatively late in life.
Believe me, my dear, I do.
It played havoc with my wardrobe, of course. And I had to take a good deal of ribbing from the lads.
Oh, people can be so cruel. But what can one do?
About cruelty, very little. But about my wardrobe, very much indeed. Dr. Gastrell, although I am not a medical person myself, I believe that bribery is customary in such cases as this. And so, if you will promise to buy me a lavish new wardrobe, silks from Old Cathay, musk-scented satins from Yucatan, rare velvets from the flamingo-laden shores of the Bosphorus, I shall agree to remain quite silent concerning your particular shame.
Very well, Miss Blaines.
Good. The shops open at 9 o'clock, I believe. Shall we go into town tomorrow?
As you please.
You are now my creature, Dr. Gastrell. doomed to serve my bidding lest I disclose your dark secret. How very satisfying.
I may say so, Miss Blaines. I'm surprised at your shameless effrontery. You seem such a nice young man, as I recall. What has changed you?
Who can say? We all have our little dreams, Doctor. Revenge on you was one of mine. About the only one left to me, in fact. Well, what an exhausting as well as an exhilarating day.
Yes, Miss Blaines. I, too, have my little dream. No, don't laugh. It's quite true. You see, my career, if I may be frank, has never reached the real heights. I have needed one great breakthrough, some sort of medical triumph. I have always believed that there is no significant difference between a man like myself and a simple cobbler, between, if you will, a master and his servant that could not be overcome by a simple operation on the humbler creature's brain. One twirl of the scalpel, one snip of the scissors, a few hacks of the saw, and all would be transformed. But how could I do it, you ask? And to whom? Miss Blaines? Asleep during my speech, too. Yet it does give me an opportunity to rummage through her handbag. A photograph of a callow young man, with the inscription, "To Haroldine with all my devotion." Bransbury's cuff, if I'm not mistaken, and there is writing on it as well. War, perhaps in only a year or so. And what will I ever have accomplished, other than deflowering a few serving girls, removing the odd healthy limb, hardly a lifetime's achievements? No, I have done nothing yet. But could I once perform my operation on the head of some low-serving man like Bransbury, removing a small portion of his brain to render him the equal of a lord? Can this be done before the world is done? Oh, yes, I swear it shall.
We meet again at last, Dr. Gastrell. I see you have been talking to Miss Blaines.
Where's the butler, Lady Wolfruna?
Bransbury? I don't know. Perhaps he's gone down to the wine cellar. It is almost my hour for sherry. Why do you ask?
It's just that he looked a trifle peaky at our last meeting. Thought I might have a look at him. He might require an operation. Who knows? No charge, of course. My treat. Never mind. I'll seek him out.
There's no need for movement. I shall ring for him. Doctor!
My lady?
The doctor is seeking you, Bransbury. You may as well stay here until he returns.
Thank you, madam. Your sherry. Madam, I hesitate to return to the subject I touched upon earlier this afternoon. I do so only to announce that under the prevailing circumstances, I think it best that I tender my notice to take effect in 2 weeks.
Your notice, Bransbury? You wish to leave? Surely not. When I rejected you a short while ago, I was speaking of you personally. I meant to cast no aspersion on your work. No, it's tip-top, I assure you.
Thank you, my lady, but no. Clearly I have entirely misunderstood the situation here. To have dreamt that someday, however fleetingly, I might, if only once... But as I see, my case is quite hopeless. I must withdraw my labor.
Bransbury, no. Why, what will you do?
Weep, I suppose, madam. Pine for a while, most probably. Perhaps rent a small garret in Soho, take to drink and to uttering oaths of the most repellent character. Move into a flop house in some seedy seaside town. Grow grizzled and shabby and wasted. Be beaten up by my fellow ruffians, arrested for vagrancy and thrown into jail. Be released, only to wander homeless in the rain for days, hungry and crazed in my wits, and then, after a suitable period, walk slowly into the sea some misty morning in autumn as the gulls cry above me. Well, something of that sort, I imagine. I haven't really planned it all out yet.
But that's no kind of life for a man like you. No, you must stay. You were born for the sound of the salver and the tea tray, Bransbury, of silver against china, the tinkling discourse of spoons, the crunch of toast when moistened with marmalade, the clink of the decanter, the gurgle of the port. My God, Bransbury, you are that rare being privileged beyond all others, the man chosen to serve his fellows.
No, madam, I am sorry I must go. I have no choice.
Nor do I. You are, as I say, a tip-top menial and a quite necessary personal possession. Bransbury, I am not willing to part with you, especially with my gala garden party coming up on the 31st of next month. It is a social occasion. I shall not put at risk. Very well. We shall couple in the library in precisely 5 minutes. That will still leave you time to see to the flan and sweep out the box room.
Couple, madam?
Yes. We shall unite in sexual congress, but only the once, mind you.
Can it be? You and me in the library in 5 minutes?
Yes, but afterwards I want none of this giving notice nonsense.
Uh-huh.
And no Christmas bonus this year, you understand?
Yes.
I shall see you shortly, then.
My dream, my only dream. Oh, gracious heaven, if ever I have shown by word or deed my disbelief in your great power of good, forgive my base suspicions.
Braswell, sausage, I've been looking everywhere for you.
Oh, that's very kind of you, Doctor. And now, if you'll excuse me...
One moment, Bransby. May I have a word with you?
Oh, just a brief one, I'm afraid, sir. I have an engagement in...
Won't take a second. It's a matter of professional curiosity.
Yes, sir?
Bransby, the back of your head, is it always covered with that mottled rash?
A mottled rash, sir?
Yes, quite a thriving one, in fact. Tell me, does it itch badly?
The rash? No, Doctor. Indeed, I was not even aware of its existence.
Numb, is it? Oh, dear. Have you had any pain recently, of any sort?
Yes, now that you mention it. A slight headache yesterday evening before dinner, but it went away.
That stage has already passed, has it? Anything else?
Well, I have a slight sore throat, a bit of a cold, I fancy.
Symptoms very much like those of the common cold. I see. I think I had better have a look at you, Bransby.
Now, Dr. Gastrell?
Yes. Only a quick examination. Just take a moment or two.
Very well. Shall I remove my shirt?
Oh, I'd rather you didn't. I have no objection to skin itself, but it unfortunately often plays the host to such things as freckles and warts and pimples and hairs in the most injudicious of places. I suppose you could strip down your waistcoat.
Certainly, Doctor.
Can you feel this tap on your back?
Yes, Doctor.
And this?
Yes.
And this?
No.
Ah.
What is it, Doctor?
Bransby, may I feel your head?
Of course.
Ah. Oh. Sorry, Bransby. Most unprofessional to gasp with horror. I do apologize.
Well, that's quite all right, sir. Is there something wrong?
Bransby... We all must die at some time or other. At least, all my patients seem to.
Die? But what has that to do with me?
I have something to tell you, Bransby, of a rather morbid nature. I hope you will forgive me bringing it up.
Is it about my condition?
Oh, you've guessed, I see. Yes, it is. To begin with, this is not one of those awful summer colds that hang on for ages and ages. No, this won't hang on at all. However, my news is not entirely comforting, I'm afraid. You have Quasvat's complaint, a rare condition, if not a particularly interesting one. I promise I won't bore you with the technicalities. Suffice it to say that it is, one, always brief, two, always painful, and three, always fatal. The three A's, as we call them in the world of healing.
I see. How long do I have?
Oh, take your time, Bransby. I haven't another appointment till 5:30.
No, I mean, how much longer will I live?
Well, it could be... 3 weeks, 3 months, or 3 minutes. I'd rather not be pinned down. But I am inclined to favour the 3 weeks myself. Although, with modern hospital care, you might not last quite that long. Why do you ask?
This will break Lady Wulfuna's heart. She lives for my smiles.
Ah, well, then you'll just have to smile. Oh, for heaven's sake, Bransby! Just because you're dying, I hope you're not going to spoil everybody else's good time with your eternal belly aching or screaming in the night or flailing about in pain or any of that nonsense. I've seen it all too often, my man. It doesn't press me in the least. We all have our problems. I myself am having considerable difficulties with my boiler just now. But you don't find me mentioning it all the time.
No, sir. In fact, I had no idea. But pardon me, Doctor. I don't wish to seem a bellyacher, but isn't there something you can do for me?
Oh, of course. Here, take two of these placebos 6 times a day. And if you become conscious at any time, fall to the floor until it passes. No shilly-shallying, mind you. And avoid all sorts of physical exertion. Except, of course, in the line of duty. All domestic chores, however strenuous, you may perform with complete safety. No problem there. But any physical excitement is out of the question.
Even bowls? It is my only solace.
Yes, I'm afraid so. And, of course, any activity of a carnal nature, intercourse, copulation, what you will. Or, more precisely, what you won't. These things are to be strictly avoided. Indeed, it would be fatal to you and most unsettling to your partner.
Oh, no. Not now. Not now. Oh, heaven, is this the reward for all my years of chastity? More years of chastity? Oh, Dr. Gastrell, is there no other treatment for me, apart from these placebos and a loveless life?
There is only one way to restore you to perfect health. An operation, delicate, complex, fascinating, and only one man in the world dare perform it. Dr. Ainsley Gastrell of Dedlington Peveril.
Yourself?
Even so.
How remarkably convenient. And will you? My salary is not great, but I saved up a small amount for my senility. It is yours, if you will do it, together with my undying, or as it may be, my dying, gratitude.
Yes, I shall do it.
Oh, thank you. How soon? I don't wish to rush you, but it is a matter of some urgency to me.
I should do it now. Were the coffee table a little bigger? No, I'll do it tonight. Around about 5 in my surgery?
I shall slip out somehow. Thank you, Doctor.
You will have to fill out a form and sign a release, a perfectly standard procedure before risking one's life, I assure you. I'll get the forms. I always carry a few with me in my overcoat.
Brandy. Oh. I have been waiting for you in the library for over 3 minutes. You are usually so punctual.
Oh, my lady.
I do not find your hesitation particularly flattering. Most men of my acquaintance would jump at the opportunity and continue jumping for some considerable time. Indeed, many of them have.
But, madam,
and now it's growing late. Here, come along and unbutton as you go.
Oh,
there's a good fellow. Oh, really, Brandy?
Well,
I've arranged a roaring fire, dressed seductively, and fluffed up the tiger skin rug specially.
Well, alas, madam, look, I can't. Well, not right now. Look, couldn't we put it off until later tonight? Right after dinner, for example.
During coffee. Well, your coyness is absurd, Brandy. Now, get out of those clothes. Come along with me.
But my lady...
Well, Miss Blake. I understand your reluctance, Bransbury.
I'm so sorry to have awakened you, madam.
Lady Wulfruna, I had not realized you required your staff to serve you quite so devotedly. Your interviews must be most exhausting, for the applicants at least.
Miss Blaines, and precisely what are you implying?
An interesting new angle for my story.
Miss Blaines, I fear that you have misunderstood everything you have overheard. I can assure you that many people in the highest society will testify as to my character.
Indeed, Lady Wulfruna, the endorsement of satisfied users.
This is the grossest insolence. Bransbury, slap that woman.
You're very well, my lady. I do apologize, Miss Blaines. I shall try not to break your spectacles.
So I, too, am to feel the touch of his glorious flesh. Are you not jealous, Lady Wulfruna?
Bransbury, pull her hair and scratch her eyes out while you're at it.
Yes, my lady, immediately.
One moment, Bransbury. Here is Dr. Gastrell. I shall clear my name once and for all. Dr. Gastrell, I call upon you, as an objective member of genteel society, to defend my reputation against the allegations of that poisonous woman.
Oh, Miss Blaines, I cannot believe it. Perhaps you misunderstood her, Lady Wulfruna.
And can you believe that I would be guilty of such things?
What things?
Lechery and ravishment, only a few moments ago.
With whom?
With Bransbury there.
Bransbury? Quite impossible, I'm afraid. And I feel a trifle mistaken there, Miss Blaines.
There, you see. Very well, Lady Wulfruna. I am prepared to overlook such a minor scandal.
I am pleased to hear it.
There will be much more to my expose of you than your pathetic flutters in the servants' quarters. You see, I did some investigating when I was down in Squalor Town earlier today. I asked a few questions. Lady Wulfruna, what exactly do they do with their time there?
Who? The people?
We do have a little workhouse there, all profits going to the estate, of course. It gives the poor things something to do and helps them to feel that they're pulling their own weight. To those who are interested, we offer shirt stitching, cloth weaving, bone grinding, a little match factory, no end of activities.
But if they are not interested, they are put into a replica of a debtor's prison, are they not? And shackled together and flogged at the discretion of the warders.
We are not speaking of a holiday resort on the Riviera, Miss Blaines. It is, after all, a slum, a scene of squalor and poverty and injustice. I have a duty to the many thousands of tourists who visit us each year to maintain a certain authenticity. Conditions are, as far as possible, at least as bad as in the old days, if I may quote from our brochure. My article will secure a whole new reputation for you, Your Ladyship. I plan to entitle it The Beast of Gloucestershire. We must arrange for photographs. You will wear that dressing gown, won't you? Dr. Gansrell, do something. The woman is quite without charity.
My dear Miss Blaines, I know from personal experience that you are a woman of discretion and fine feeling. Preserve, I pray, the time-honoured name of Lady Wulfruna. As your humble creature, I plead with you, Miss Blaines. Indeed, I beg.
Dr. Gastrell.
I am prepared. Nay, I am honoured to remain kneeling here at this shrine which is you, my ethereal heraldine, for the rest of the afternoon. Yea, even when the day gathers the sunbeams in its rustling skirt of dusk and calls the moon to glory, I shall be here calling you. Not to glory, for with glory you will always be, but to mercy, mercy for her ladyship. I shall stay here as long as necessary for your gracious reply.
Dr. Gastrell.
Pardon me, Doctor. I hope you haven't forgotten your operation on me at 7:45.
Not at all, Bransby.
His operation?
Yes, on me.
Just a quick one. On the brain and thereabouts.
Gastrell, you are incorrigible. Stay away from him, Bransbury. Several years ago, he performed an appendectomy on me. He destroyed all of my life and much of me.
But you still look a healthy woman, if I may say so, madam.
But I was a healthy man.
Oh, I shall expose you too, Dr. Gastrell. I shall destroy both your reputations. Now, let me see. Shall I ruin them singly or in combination? The butcher and the beast.
But will my disclosures about you, Miss Blaines, enhance your reputation with him? I found this photograph in your bag while you were sleeping. To Harold Dean, with all my devotion. What is his name? And would he be interested to know that you were formerly Harold the Boulder Blaines, Bouncer the Old Red Lion Stevenage?
Well done, Dr. Gastrell.
I will not tell you his name, and so you will not tell him anything.
Might I glance at it for a moment, Doctor? Thank you so much. As it happens, I believe I know the gentleman. I often bowl against him when he visits the area. A player of rare dash and bravura. You are a lucky girl, Miss Blaines.
I think not, Bransby. What is his name?
Oh, no, madam. Please don't ask me such a question. This young lady has done nothing of a heinous nature, such as you and the good doctor have, begging your pardons. Her shame is truly another's, not her own.
I don't want simple truths, Bransbury, but names. Christian and sir.
But, madam,
I... Bransbury, surely you will not betray me to them. Why, man, you and I are both of humble origins, are we not? My family was so poor, my mother sold her hair. And when that was gone, she often had to sell her eyebrows, too. Threatened to take me as a pair. When a barefoot boy, as I was then, I used to have to stand and sing on street corners for pennies in the winter until my feet were frozen, and then tap dance until the early hours.
Sold her eyebrows, did she? Lord, I knew people on my very estate who would be happier to sell their eyebrows if they could. No market for them now. Everybody has his own these days. What is the name, Bransby?
But, my lady, how can I tell you?
How can you not? You are my butler. This is my house. That is my order. Now, speak.
No, I don't know. Surely humanity dictates...
Bransby, the name.
Very well, madam. Forgive me, Miss Blaines. His name is Darnsley. Darnsley Butterworth.
Good. And do you know his address?
Yes, I think so, my lady.
What is it?
The old rectory, Simperton Lane, Quilbury, Branton on Tull, Frampingsmoor, Northamptonshire.
And the telephone number?
Frampingsmoor 81093.
Thank you, Bransby. Now dial it for me, will you? I wish to speak to Mr. Butterworth on a matter of some indelicacy.
Yes, my lady.
I shall let you speak to him after I have made my announcement, Miss Blaines. He may wish to say
Goodbye forever, Harold.
Lady Wulfruna.
Yes?
Replace the receiver, Bransbury, and answer the door, and hurry back. We shall not continue without you.
Of course. Excuse me, please, your ladyship. Miss Blames, Dr. Gastrell.
Lady Wulfruna, perhaps on the other hand...
Yes, Miss Blames.
Pardon me, my lady. It is a telegram for you.
Oh? Well, read it to me, Bransbury, and then we can continue with the denouement.
Certainly, my lady. Dear Lady Wulfruna, no time to telephone before my leaving country. Sorry to tell you, world war imminent. Estimate total destruction your area almost immediately after telegram received. Best of luck. Goodbye forever. General Sir Fulton Sheckles, TCB, CBE, DSOMC.
It has happened. So soon. That the world should end in my lifetime, of all people.
I prophesy a hard and bitter time. Black winds with thunder rumbling in their loins, and lightning fierce come hither to rain woe and peril on the earth. Eternity has reached its end, for lo, the cup is dry, and we must drink the dark.
Now, everyone, no need to be so upset. We'll just hop down to the shelter in the basement. I've had it fitted up to look rather like the house for just such a possibility. It is below the servants' quarters, I'm afraid. Well, I think we shall find it very useful to have a doctor down there, and a former bouncer can handle any trespassers who may try to get in. We had better hurry. Bransbury, you will join us, of course. We shall need you more than ever. But first, clear up these tea things, will you? Come along, everyone.
Is it, Bransbury?
August, my lady.
Still August. Oh. How long have we been down here?
It will be 6 weeks on Thursday.
Isn't this Thursday?
Oh, no, madam. It is Saturday, the 31st.
The 31st? The day of my garden party, is it not?
I believe so, madam.
I hate to think what my garden is like now. The nasturtiums, all covered in ashes, must look quite dreadful. And the Lady Wulfruna rose garden... Is there any more tea left in the pot, Bransbury?
I shall look, madam. No, my lady, there isn't. Nor is there any left among our supplies in the storage room, I'm afraid. There's a little coffee in there. And then we may have to move in the direction of the cocoa, I fear.
Oh. Well, where this afternoon is Miss...
Miss Blaines?
Yes, that's it.
Oh, this is the time when she usually mopes in her room, madam. Although she will probably be moping out here very shortly, dressed in her garments of woe.
And where is Dr. Gastrell?
Wandering in the adjoining wine cellar, I fancy, madam. This is the usual hour for his afternoon stroll. And speaking of the wine cellar, my lady, and of Dr. Gastrell, I'd been under the impression that there was a case or two of claret Rocher 45 in there yesterday, and a carton of Swan Pate in storage. But they are not there now. It all appears to have been taken.
I think that unlikely, Bransbury. Who might it be, and where would he stash the booty? Gentleman though he is, Dr. Gastrell could hardly consume a case or two of wine and a carton of patty overnight, at least not without a bravura display of dyspepsia this morning. Yet I have not heard a murmur. I trust you are not accusing that Blaines person, although she is a strange creature, skulking behind her dark veil. I doubt that she is devouring patty back there. No, Bransbury. There is no thief here, I am sure. Most likely, you are merely losing your mind.
But thank you, my lady. I trust you are right. And now I shall return to my dusting, if I may.
You know, I must congratulate you, Bransbury, on how well you have pitched in and helped during these trying times. You have not let the change in circumstances disturb your routine in any way. Indeed, if anything, you have become even more helpful and self-effacing than before.
Thank you, madam.
And I flatter myself that I have remained more or less unchanged in my manner of life as well.
Outstandingly so, your ladyship.
We are not dissimilar in some ways, you and I. You never met my late husband, Lord Pendley, did you?
No, Lord Pendley, alas, no. He died before my arrival.
As you know, I seldom speak of him now. I seldom spoke of him then, or to him,
He was never a subject of interest, apart, of course, from his great age and even greater wealth. And yet, Bransby, he was in a way the perfect partner for me, especially after his death. That was the crowning touch to our relationship.
A glowing tribute, my lady.
I had never considered remarriage, Bransby, until a few weeks ago, but suddenly I felt the yearning for companionship rushing upon me. I have someone in mind, but I fear he lives only there, in my mind, and in my eager dreams.
Oh, surely not, madam. You shall find him one day, I have no doubt.
Indeed, Bransby. But where and how? And who?
A series of searching questions, my lady, but I fear I am not the one to answer them.
But you yourself are the answer. Ah, Bransby, fling off your mantle of modesty, I pray you, and know yourself as you really are. Sensuality, desire, cleanliness, thrift.
Madam, while I hesitate to meddle in your private life, I feel bound to point out that such an alliance would be unthinkable.
Do you presume to advise me in matters of propriety? Really, Bransby, I am amazed at your impudence. I assure you, I have given the subject considerable thought.
Of course, madam.
You are not, I take it, betrothed to another?
Oh, no, madam.
Then Bransby, I am happy to say I can see no objection to the match at all. Indeed, I give it my blessing.
Oh, thank you, my lady. And yet I fear that I myself know of an insurmountable objection, if I may say so. I do not wish to alarm you, madam, but I'm afraid that I am surprisingly ill, fatally so, it would appear.
Poorly? Are you? An invalid butler? Frail and wasting away, lavishing his last few moments on his beloved, you certainly know how to appeal to the ladies. So, it is settled at last. Dear, faithful Bransby, you shall be the most attentive of husbands, I feel sure, and I, not an unresponsive wife. You may squeeze my hand with uncontrollable passion.
No, madam, I will not.
Bransby.
Madam, I realize that a few weeks ago I gave you every reason to believe that my interest in you was something other than servile, but more recently I have smothered such ambitions. I am already wedded, madam, wedded to service, and she is a wife to whom I shall not be untrue. For here, in this basement, I have found my life's purpose, to bring comfort and hope and jollity to all those I serve during this difficult period. You see, my lady, there is no honor greater than this honor of serving you. The humblest task is to me sweeter than the most gracious privilege.
Ringing phrases, Bransby, that stir the heart like battle songs of old. You are right, of course. Yours is a sacrifice on the grandest of scales. Good afternoon, Dr. Gastrell. How are you?
Still heavily bearded, Lady Wolfuna.
I have apologized daily for not thinking to store a supply of razors down here, Dr. Gastrell. It isn't the sort of thing one thinks of. I do have a vast array of tweezers. I should be delighted to share out.
Oh, no, thank you. Pour me a drink, will you, Bransby?
Oh, yes, sir.
It is difficult, very difficult for a wild thing like myself to be confined down here like an eagle chained in a pit. I'm a boisterous cad by nature, as you will recall, but what opportunity for personal abuse and lechery do I have here? Oh, another drink, Bransby.
Yes, certainly, sir.
I am leaving for a moment, Bransby. If anyone wants me, I shall be rummaging through the foodstuffs in search of Eccles' cakes.
But, madam, I should be happy to go. Surely such things are my responsibility.
No. You stay here with Dr. Gastrell. I shan't be long.
Nothing much to look forward to these days, Bransby. Nothing much to look back on.
Doctor, I should like you to perform the operation on me now. That is, if it would make you feel any better.
I haven't the surgical apparatus, Bransby. For that matter, I haven't the dream any longer. There was a time I would have done it with the crudest kitchen implements. I would have torn your head open like a child his presents on Christmas morning. I've lost the ambition. No reputation to establish, no world to impress. And then, there's this accursed beard and this huge moustache. Whenever I look out from over it, it's as though there is an awning over everything I see. It's like living over a butcher shop. She called me a butcher, didn't she?
The who, sir?
That Blaine's woman. I haven't forgotten. The end of the world may distract some people from their petty grudges, but I am true to my feelings. Oh, not that I feel much these days, Bransby. I'll make no secret of it. These are not good days for me. I haven't been happy. The war, that was the turning point. Somehow, since the destruction of everything, I've become embittered.
Yet we live, sir, whole in body and mind.
Please don't speak of bodies. I'm not interested in bodies any longer, not even my own. Begging your pardon, Bransby, your body I find particularly offensive.
And why is that, sir?
I don't know. It's the way it bows all the time, I suppose, or poses helpfully, or cringes with shame, or tiptoes discreetly, or brings things, or clears up. And I mean, nothing personal. You're not a bad chap. I am, though. Very bad. I even started drinking secretly, in addition to my alcoholism, that is.
Indeed, sir, you surprise me. The claret, is it, sir? The Rocher 45? It's very good with pâté, so they say.
Oh! No, I haven't tried that yet. I'll get around to it, no doubt. I'm drinking them all in order. The oldest first. Don't want anything to spoil. I've just got through most of the Victorian stuff up to 1896. Not bad, really. Well, I am bad, really, I mean. And so unattractive to the ladies. Don't you think I'm unattractive to the ladies, Bransby?
Not at all, Doctor. I'm sure that many a woman, were there many a woman, would still find your charms not unmagnetic.
Do you think so, Bransby?
I'm certain, sir.
Do you think that, for example, her ladyship secretly craves me?
Very secretly, sir. Surely a debauchee of your distinction cannot have lost all his allure so suddenly.
Indeed not. A good point. Perhaps I'll try again after all. I'm rather in the mood for a little spirited wooing. I think I'll gussy myself up a bit. Goodbye, Bransby.
Goodbye, sir. Oh, good afternoon, Miss Plains. Oh, what a beautiful sequined veil you're wearing, madam. How pleasant to see it twinkling away all the time, day and night. One does yearn, of course, for a less cluttered view of your face on occasion, but perhaps it is best if we are not cloyed with the richnesses of life.
Oh, Bransby.
Oh, I meant no criticism, madam. My intention was merely gross flattery, I assure you.
Bransby, may I reveal my shame to you?
Your shame, madam? I should be honored, of course.
Very well. I shall lift my veil. Behold, Bransby.
Madam.
Yes, I have a beard. The last vestige of my old way of life. The doctors say it will soon go away. One great shedding and there's an end. But for the moment, I am forced to shave at fairly regular intervals to maintain my feminine aspect at its best. Or rather, I'm forced not to shave, for, as you know, there are no razors to be had down here.
Yet, madam, if I may say so, it is not at all unattractive.
Oh, really, Bransby? One can hardly play the femme fatale with a flowing beard. It's disgusting.
Oh, I don't know, madam. I think it makes you look rather artistic. But if you don't like it, that's what matters.
I don't, Bransby. But, you know, I do admire the smoothness of your face. Hardly any beard there at all.
Quite so, madam. A butler must never be scruffy. That's one of the rules of the job.
Remarkable. How do you manage it, Bransby? A feat of self-control, is it?
No, not precisely. My dear Miss Blaines, I too have a secret. It is this.
A razor, Bransby.
Yes, my own private razor. I took it from my quarters in the final moments just before I joined you all down here. I vowed that I should never let it out of my sight.
Indeed.
But, well, these are exceptional circumstances. You may use it if you wish. If you promise to return it to me regularly...
Oh, thank you, Bransby. You are most chivalrous.
Not at all, madam. I have a little vial of eau de cologne you may wish to use afterwards.
Oh, Bransby. Bransby, I must say something. For several weeks... I have admired you from afar, and have yearned to admire you from nearby. Indeed, from the prospect of an intimate embrace. What is more, a passionate one in your very bed.
Indeed, madam.
I must say this is sudden.
Hardly. It is a feeling, indeed a lust of long standing, I assure you. It has grown like the grain, silently, unfailingly through the passing weeks. It is now ready for cropping. And you, you are like October apples, long a-mellowing. Die not upon the tree, my sweet, for I long to fill my basket with your fruitage.
Very strikingly put, madam. But I fear that I cannot yield in all conscience. Why, what of Darnsley, your beau, and my old friend? It would be most unprincipled.
You know, this war has been a real eye-opener for me, Bransbury, although doubtless an eye-closer for many others. I now see Darnsley for what he really is, or was, a sluggard and a bully boy. But you, you are a person of courtesy and order, of true compassion and outstanding personal hygiene, very much like my Wanda. And that is why I have chosen to discard my future with Darnsley and to take up with you.
I'm afraid that it cannot be, madam. I'm needed full time in this household to bring hope and comfort to all, not least to yourself.
Oh, but you are my hope, Bransbury, and, I hope, my comfort. Don't you see? Oh, I'm a desperate woman, desperate for you, distraught without you. Oh, Bransbury, my dear one, my gentle sweetling. Ooh. Let us become engaged, informally and for an indefinite period, if you prefer. Say at least that I may perhaps hope. Please, my darling.
Very well, madam. Certainly you may perhaps hope.
Oh, thank you. I shall hope, and very often. I shall hope that you will not be able to resist me for very long. And with some confidence, as you may remember, I'm rather beautiful without my whiskers. You shall see. And Bransbury, I shall bring you back a curl of my beard as a keepsake.
Oh, thank you, madam. Such an unusual gift. I shall treasure it.
Ah, Bransbury, I have just been loitering amongst the provisions. I cannot seem to find the Echoes cakes anywhere. I know I put several boxes of them aside for an emergency.
Indeed, I remember them well, my lady.
Go and search for them exhaustively. And while you are there, take notes of any other missing essentials. It may be necessary to hold a public inquiry.
Certainly, madam.
No tea? No Echoes cakes? Really, the situation is becoming grotesque.
Hello again, Lady Wulfruna.
Doctor!
Pardon me for interrupting your musings, but I cannot keep my great secret from you any longer. Bird-like, it flutters caged in my breast, and I must release it to the open air. Lady Wulfruna.
Yes?
My dear Wulfruna, for years I have longed for someone like you, the pattern of all desire. But where else could I find that wanton grace, that potent delicacy, those wild yearnings made flesh, and that flesh made fire, the perfection of the snowflake, with the permanence of the glacier, the rose entwined with the sunbeam? I hope I do not speak too presumptuously.
Not at all, Doctor. Such a confession does you infinite credit.
Does it?
Yes. It is always good for one to pursue the ideal in life, however impossible of attainment.
Very true, Your Ladyship. And thank you for your encouragement. Oh, Miss Blaines. Excuse me, Lady Wulfruna. Pardon me, Miss Blaines. I wonder if you happen to overhear what I said to Lady Wulfruna just now. If so, would you be so kind as to apply all the sentiments to yourself, and with my deepest sincerity?
I'm afraid I've only just entered. I've missed your entire scene, Dr. Gastrell.
Ah. I say, you do look rather better out of that veil. Quite a discovery, my dear. Like the mist dispersing to reveal the glittering heavens beyond.
What was it you wished to say to me and Lady Wulfruna?
Oh, no. Just to you now. My dear Miss Blaines, I have long sought someone like you, the pattern of all desires. But where else could I find that wanton grace, that potent delicacy?
Pardon me for interrupting you, Dr. Gastrell, but as it happens, I'm not free to accept your attentions. You see, I am promised to another.
To whom? That Darnsley fellow? Sad to say, my dear, he's most probably been dead for quite a little while now.
No, not him. It is another. It is Bransbury, in fact. So, you see, you really have no chance. And now, excuse me, please.
Bransbury? The butler?
May I sit with you, Lady Wulfruna?
Certainly. Bothering you, was he? Ah, men.
Ah, yes.
Oh, I beg your pardon, I quite forgot. You've been one yourself, have you not? A man, I mean.
Why, yes. But quite a while ago now.
Most unusual, though, your having been a man. I can't help wondering what it was like. It's been a remarkable experience.
Well, it didn't seem so at the time. No one takes that sort of thing for granted. But looking back on it now, Lady Wulfruna, there are many things about being a man that one misses these days. Belching at the pub with one's friends, telling coarse, unfunny stories and rocking with false laughter, getting into fights with strangers and bleeding extensively. Oh, but most of all, I miss my wonder.
Your wonder?
My fiancé.
Oh, before your conversion. Now, this is fascinating.
A charming girl she was. Delicate, forthright, and so appealing. Even more appealing in her way than my Bransbury. Much more so, in fact, but don't tell him I said so. A lovely girl.
You are Bransbury?
Yes. Oh, Bransbury's yours from a property point of view, no question about that. But spiritually, emotionally, physically, he is mine. Indeed, we are destined to become lovers at the earliest possible opportunity. His pursuit of me has been most successful. A whirlwind courtship earlier this afternoon. He is a man of such thoughtfulness and decision.
Indeed.
Yes. Oh, can I share with you my girlish feelings, Lady Wulfruna? Oh, I shall try not to gush inordinately, and yet I am sorely tempted to do so. For Bransbury is the best thing that has happened to me since I assumed my present gender.
I see.
I rather suspect that he will be devoting much more of his time to me in future, so if he seems less attentive to your needs than before, please do not be cross with him. He has enlisted in a nobler cause than domestic service. He has joined the troops of Cupid.
Excuse me.
A lady rejected for a commoner by a butler. I had not felt the full horror of war until this moment. The old order is gone and the new chaos is come. I must do whatever I can to re-establish some sense of proportion down here, though my methods may seem desperate indeed, especially to Miss Blaine's.
My dear, I shall call your Bransbury back now. I know how painful it is for lovers to be parted.
Thank you, Lady Wulfruna.
You rang, your ladyship?
How is the food supply, Bransbury?
Very low, your ladyship. I don't understand it. There's no Eccles cakes, to be sure, you're quite right, but also no coffee, no spirits, no champagne, no venison, no caviar, truffles, fowl. Almost everything is gone.
Grosso, only a smattering of cottage cheese, a sack of potatoes, some onions, salt and pepper, tinned fruit and capers, and a few bottles of sandy. Which will hardly last through the weekend.
I can't understand it, madam. I've tried to be frugal with our resources.
I'm sure you have. We must all consider the food problem very carefully.
Quite right, Lady Wulfruna. Has anyone a suggestion?
As you may know, I myself have, over the years, organized many charity drives to feed the starving millions. Our needs here are, happily, on a smaller scale. I believe I may have come up with a useful idea. Let me speak in layman's terms. Just one of us? No more. Miss One? If slaughtered, humanely, of course, could provide the remaining three with food aplenty for several days if A, wisely carved, B, well prepared, and C, prudently consumed. A ragout, for example, we have no lack of potatoes, I believe, seems a very practical possibility, filling, nutritious, and always a favorite with the men. We could all draw straws to choose the subject. We have plenty of those left as well. Well, what are your first impressions? Miss Blaine's?
A highly original suggestion, my dear Lady Wulfruna. I'm not quite certain myself, but I am in favor of voting on it at any rate. We are still a democracy, I hope. Certainly. I trust no one here is a vegetarian. Excellent. Well, we shall vote on the idea, then. Miss Blaines, your pad and pencil, please. Certainly. I myself vote yes. Indeed, I am ashamed to say I feel unusually peckish for this time of day. There. Now, Dr. Gastrell, how do you vote?
I vote no. I am wholeheartedly against the project, particularly in regard to the possibility of my being the Raggle. You must see it from my point of view. The death and devouring of some people, butlers, journalists, may seem no great matter in the scheme of things. I quite see that, of course. But the killing of a doctor is a tragedy, not only for the whole community, but for the doctor as well.
But, Doctor, surely you see that some of us are quite exempt from selection. I, for example, as hostess, must of course partake of the victuals with my guests. My absence from the table would certainly be noticed. Bransbury here must prepare the food, and you will be invaluable in the carving of the entrees and in the trimming away of any fat or gristle. No offense to anyone.
I see. This is a sorry business, but supplies are running low, and as a doctor, I can assure everyone eating is a basic factor in good health. And so, with reluctance, I vote with you, Lady Wulfruna. Yes.
Ah. And you, Miss Blaines? I am entirely opposed to this grotesque idea, this conspiracy, speaking as its object. And I'm sure Bransbury here will agree with me. I shall put you down, then, as a no. And how do you vote, Bransbury?
Well, needless to say, madam, I vote...
Bransbury, as a mere serving person, has, of course, no vote.
But, my lady...
So it is decided at last. Go and get a straw, Bransbury, and offer it to Miss Blaines.
Lady Wulfruna...
Madam, may I make a suggestion?
Very well, Bransbury. Now, what is it?
My lady, instead of planning the dinner so early, it is, after all, only 3:45, and we've only just had tea, might it not be wise for someone actually to go outside and observe the state of things? Eating, Miss Blaines, is a serious matter. There is the whole question of sauce and seasoning to begin with, and such a meal may not prove to be necessary.
Not necessary. Bransbury, we are speaking of human survival.
Madam, perhaps things aren't quite so dangerous on the outside as we fear.
Bransbury, that seems improbable, considering the likely effects of worldwide devastation.
Perhaps one could do at least a touch of looting, madam, from the local village shops and delicatessens which have been laid bare.
Perhaps you are right. But who will do it? I certainly won't go out, not looking like this. We've been out of mascara for ages. I hadn't mentioned it before, didn't want to alarm anybody, but there it is. What about you, Doctor?
Well, alas, I can't go. As a doctor, I'm clearly needed here to tend to the sick. Should anyone become so.
Quite right. And Bransbury had better stay here, too. We could scarcely risk having to do without his indispensable services. So, Miss Blaines, once again, the challenge falls to you.
Pardon me, my lady. There is no need for Miss Blaines to go. I shall do it.
Oh, Bransbury. My beloved Bransbury. Oh, but no, I cannot allow it, my sweet.
Madam, if I may say so, I insist. I shall go, and gladly.
What the danger, Bransbury?
Madam, it is my duty as butler. And if I am not poisoned by the atmosphere or slain by marauding survivors, it shall be my pleasure to return to you all with a frank estimate of the situation.
Very well, Bransbury. I did not have you in mind, but if you feel you must...
I do, my lady.
Oh, my Bransbury.
I shall go now, if I may.
At least take an umbrella. Oh, and here is that curl of mine I promised you. I've woven the hairs into a little heart shape.
Very nice work, madam. Indeed, the loveliest hairball I've ever seen. Thank you. Goodbye.
Oh, when will he return? And will he return? Yes, he must, for he is to be mine. Oh, my friends, you do not know what it means to be loved by such a man. Well, nor do I must admit, but I shall very soon. To have his arms about me, his smooth face against mine, his cummerbund pressed to my waist. When Bransbury does return, Miss Blaines, let us only hope that we can trust his report.
I fear I have known him to be dishonest, even disloyal.
How infamous of you, Lady Wulfruna. It is quite noble of my Bransbury to have undertaken such a dangerous mission on behalf of us all.
Oh, hardly noble, Miss Blaines. Bransbury is under the impression that he is about to die anyhow.
About to die? My Bransbury? My Bransbury about to die?
Not precisely as it happens. I'm afraid that a few weeks ago I misdiagnosed his condition as imminently fatal.
You misdiagnosed his condition? What do you mean?
What was that? I heard something. Like the snapping of branches or bones. They sound devilish alike.
Is that it? Yes. I can hear someone on the steps. To your place, Miss Blaines. It may be an interloper for you to deal with.
It's all there! My lady, doctor, madam, it's all there!
What is Bransbury?
It's all rather as I remember it, my lady. No ruins, no carnage, no desolate landscape. The house standing as before. The lake tranquil as ever. The swans unruffled.
Any people?
Well, I thought I heard the sound of people, sir, but I saw none. However, so great was my relief that the world hadn't been destroyed after all that I abandoned my investigation, rather precipitately, I'm afraid, and rejoined you here.
Quite understandable, Bransbury.
It looks the same as ever, my lady, although the weather is rather better. A clear, mistless afternoon.
Are you quite certain, Bransbury? Not the slightest touch of devastation? Not a single festering urchin? Not a sprinkle of powdered bone? No damage at all?
No, madam. I thought you'd be pleased. The world appears to be continuing as before.
I see. Yes. That is good news, if true.
It certainly is.
Oh, Bransbury, it is miraculous news. Oh. And I have some news for you. News of life. My darling, you are not going to die any moment now of a fatal illness. Dr. Gastrell made a mistake.
Did you, Doctor?
Yes, I'm afraid so.
Oh, thank you.
Not at all. Just doing my job.
Oh, Bransbury. Bransbury mine.
My dear, dear Miss Blaine.
You had better bring in some of that shandy, Bransbury. The very best we have. This is an occasion, after all. But first, clear up those tea things, will you?
Yes, Your Ladyship.
Perhaps everything has changed. Perhaps I shall marry Miss Blaine's. Yes, I think I shall. She's a dear, devoted creature, and when clean-shaven, very demure. Oh, let me gaze again on the hairball woven by those dainty hands. Only a woman's beard, and yet...
Bransbury, the shandy.
Yes, my lady.
Well, what do you think, Doctor?
About Bransbury's report. Perhaps it is the truth, after all. I don't know.
Nor do I. I want to believe him, of course. Then again, I fear he may only be telling us this so that we shall leave here and abandon our plan to eat Miss Blaine's. I would put nothing past the man.
And yet, could it not be... Sounds like enemy troops. I knew the butler was lying.
Take your position, Blaine's. General Sir Fulton Shackles, and in full military dress.
General Sir Fulton Shackles at your service. Is it you, Lady Wilfruna? Delighted to see you.
Yes, yes, it is I, General Sir Fulton. Have you come to rescue us?
To rescue you?
To free us at last.
To free you, Lady Wilfruna? No, no, I'm afraid not. I've come to your garden party.
My garden party?
Yes. I'm afraid your guests upstairs and in the garden are missing you, despite the presence of your co-hosts. So, I've come down to seek you.
My party? But hasn't there been a war?
A war? Ah. yes, my telegram, I suppose. Do forgive me, Lady Wulfruna, and anyone else I may have inconvenienced. This is most embarrassing. I'm afraid that my message in regard to immediate annihilation was somewhat premature.
Oh?
Yes. For at the very last moment, just before the proposed catastrophe, in fact, it was decided to hold one final desperate round of negotiations. And the war was, for all intents and purposes, put off for the time being. Well, I did send you a supplementary telegram to that effect an hour or so later.
I see.
Negotiations are continuing even now, of course. In fact, we've come to rather a bad patch again.
So, there has definitely been no war.
No, none at all, Lady Wulfruna. A pity it didn't come off, in a way. I'm speaking as a professional, of course. Would have been a fascinating operation to have seen at first hand. You know, it's strange, Wulfruna. People don't like us soldiers very much, at least when there's no war taking place. But everyone's jolly glad to have us around once we've started one.
Very true, General.
Now, don't misunderstand me. I have no liking at all for war. I've seen too much of it. Every opportunity I can get, in fact. But at certain times and in certain situations, it seems there is just no other way to bring suffering and death to mankind on a grand scale.
The existence of the world, it is a very great relief to me. I make no secret of that. But one moment, Filton. You say there is a party going on in the garden?
Well, in the garden, in the house, on the roof, everywhere. Most unusual. Some of the people dressed soberly enough, like myself, but others, those enjoying themselves most, I dare say, drinking all excellent claret, eating the venison and partridge and caviar, all these people, I say, dressed in fantastic costume. In rags, in fact.
In rags?
Yes, Wulfruna. Like your tenants down at,
Squallertown.
Yes, them.
They've taken over the house in my absence. And quite without my permission. The presumption of them.
Don't be too upset with them, Wulfruna. They're not a bad lot. Indeed, it was they who suggested that I come down here to look for you. They thought they might have heard someone snoring in the basement last night when they were here getting the supplies, the food and drink for today's party. And it is an excellent party they're throwing, no doubt of that. One can't deny it. Oh, we representatives of high society are most impressed. The entertainment is outstanding. The work songs are particularly well done.
That rabble is hosting my party. Come, everyone. We shall go upstairs now and greet my guests, Dr. Gastrell. I had not, of course, invited you to my party, but as you are here, come along. And you too, Miss Blaines. With your great strength, you can help to deal with these vile ruffians.
Miss Blaines? Pardon me, but is your name Blaines?
Mm-hmm.
Are you related to a Harold Blaines? Tall, thin girl with a dark beard and spectacles.
I am Harold Blaines. Do I know you?
You are Harold?
Yes.
Oh, I am Wonder. Your Wonder, your fiancée of earlier days.
You, Wonder? But unless I am mistaken, you are...
A man? Yes. Yes, I am now. May I explain? Oh, my dear Harold, after your alteration a few years back, I sank into despondency, a lonely and miserable woman, bereft of her love and all she desired. I left the country. For a while, I ran an alpaca ranch in the Andes. Then I was a bareback rider in Tunisia, anything to forget you. But in time, I grew to realize that I must face my problem, that I must adapt myself to the situation, return to England, and marry you. Being a woman was, of course, a disadvantage, and so, in order to improve my chances, I underwent an operation and became a man.
You did all this for me?
Yes, Harold. Afterwards, I looked for you everywhere, but there was no one named Harold Blaines answering your description, and believe me, I searched indefatigably wherever I was stationed, Hong Kong, Tobago, Kuala Lumpur, and the length and breadth of the Cameroon.
I changed my name, Wanda, to Haroldine Blaines.
Of course. I myself changed my name from Wonder Gosling to Bernard Filton Shekels. The new name has been, by the way, a great help to me in my present career. After joining the army, I fairly shot up the ranks. To be quite honest, I cannot imagine myself ever becoming General Sir Wonder Gosling, much less GCBCBEDSOMC.
Nor can I. Oh, I'm so proud of you, Wonder. I mean, General Sir Filton. My General Sir Filton.
Shall we join the party, Harold? Harold Dean. And afterwards, shall we join each other in the wedlock for which we have both so long and so vainly pined? You are unmarried, I trust, like myself.
Oh, yes.
Oh, better and better. It shall be a military wedding, if you don't mind. Swords, guns, bombs, that sort of thing.
Not at all. Oh, may I ask you a favor, General Sir Filton?
Of course, my dear.
For your best man at our wedding, might I strongly recommend someone of my own acquaintance, an invaluable comfort to me in recent days, a butler, name of Bransbury.
As you wish. The humble touch, huh? Very nice. And perhaps he could do a bit of cleaning up afterwards, if he doesn't mind. Oh, Haroldine.
My adorable General Sir Filton.
The shandy, my lady.
Never mind that, Ransby. There's much to do upstairs. Why, my party has already started. You must supervise the activities in the Rose Garden, announce the guests, organize the strolls in the grounds.
Your party?
Yes, of course. It is the 31st.
Oh, very good, my lady. Is there anything else?
Yes. Early tomorrow morning, you are to evict all the tenants from their hovels. I shall have the whole place completely restocked. And immediately afterwards, I want you to draw up a letter of dismissal. Make it firm and unequivocal.
Certainly, my lady. A letter to whom?
To you, Bransby. I am dismissing you tomorrow.
Dismissing me?
Yes. Anyone who serves me, Bransby, must be quite above suspicion. For a short while this afternoon, I suspected you, Bransby, and of disloyalty. A grave charge, indeed.
Disloyalty?
There is no need for you to go today. I don't want you to miss the party, after all. But tomorrow, I shall have you removed from the premises. In all conscience, I fear I cannot even give you a reference. But enough of these sad duties. My party must have started hours ago. I have kept my guests and myself waiting long enough. Don't look so peevish, Bransbury. This is a party, after all.
Cheer up, dear Bransbury. There's more to life than work. There is Sloth, for example, an excellent substitute. And there are the numberless stars in the infinite heavens, and there is love.
Of course, Miss Blaines. Yes, you're quite right. Oh, I shall find such comfort in marriage, and such peace in the chaste sanctuary of your receiving bosom. My sweet...
Bransbury!
Oh, my dear Bransbury, I regret to say that I have, after all, decided to scorn you and to marry General Sir Filton Sheckles.
I see, madam.
I am sorry, but the General is the girl I was engaged to all those years ago, and I have found her at last. These things happen, Bransbury. Heartbreaking, of course. I suggest, Bransbury, that you lose yourself in your toil while you have the chance. Well, let us all join the party. You know, I think my sojourn down here might serve me very well. My tales of having lived in hiding in a basement at the height of a great world war would make an extremely exciting diary. You will write it for me, Miss Blaines. Certainly, your ladyship. I should be proud to.
I shall seem to the world a ruggedly heroic figure, as well as a leading society hostess.
And I will appear as the devoted physician to a great wartime heroine. It will do my reputation in society no harm at all.
Quite so, my dear doctor. They were difficult days, of course. Yet I think we have all learned a great deal about the nature of sacrifice. Did you happen to notice any Eccles cakes upstairs, Fulton?
Yes, I believe I did, Lady Wilfruna.
Then you will announce us, Bransbury, immediately. I see no reason why, properly hostessed, my party should not be the great success I have long envisaged. Your arm, Dr. Gastrell.
It is an honor, Lady Wilfruna.
Haroldine.
General.
Come, let us go into the garden and join the party.
And thus I see, when life at last seems sweet and hope is high...
Bransbury!
Yes, my lady.
Immediately.
In The Event of the Season by Perry Pontac, Lady Wilfruna Pendley was played by Geraldine McEwen, Bransbury by Richard Caine, Miss Blaines by Maureen Lipman, Dr. Gastrell by George Baker, and General Sir Filton Sheckles by Stephen Thorne. The play was directed by Richard Wortley.